going to be starting with a continuation of last week's topic, which we did not have a chance to finish. And therefore, I will be giving out, distributing the same source sheets we had last week. Everyone could just take one of each, if you don't mind. It's not exactly in proper order, but let me just review what there is. There is an Igros Moshe, that's probably the most important, the single-sided Hebrew one. That's the most important thing that everyone should have. And the rest, there's a double-sided Hebrew one, which is the one we had 2 weeks ago. And then there's the English one, which also has two sides. There's a total of three different pieces of paper which everyone takes. We'll be able to go through the sources together. Okay. While they're being handed out, let's go right to the discussion we had last week about women covering their hair. We spoke about the dispute which among the contemporary rabbis in the 2010 edition of Tradition. We're now in 2011, ladies and gentlemen. Just got in. But we can still talk about the 2010, still hot off the press. We had concluded that contrary to Rabbi Broid's protestations, we can explain both the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch consistent with what Rabbi Broid called the Sota model. The Sota model means that the prohibition against a woman who's married, keeping her hair uncovered, is derived from Sota. And this is, if you look on the last paragraph, which is written by Rabbi Broid, he attributes this position to Rashi and Rambam. Explain the Talmud simply and completely. Fully uncovered hair is dat Moshe and not dat Yehudit. There's little doubt in my mind that this approach, adopted explicitly by Beis Shmuel and many others, is a very logical reading of Ksuba 72a b. Okay? Hair covering is then an objective obligation dependent of all times and places. Good. This is what Rabbi Broid concedes is the generally accepted approach. He, Rabbi Broid, insists that the Torah, Shulchan Aruch, and Levush have a different approach. Yes?
It was also clear to me last week, but I was thinking about it, and like it seems to me that the proof of the Gemara, where the Gemara said, you know, like the original question, you know, isn't it God's Moshe, and you give a pasuk, so it's Sota pasuk.
Right.
But the Sota pasuk, the only thing you could really learn from it is subjective. Because all you're really saying is that the Kohen took off her head covering. What does that teach you? Does it teach you that the Torah requires a head covering? No, it teaches you that the woman was wearing a head covering. So that means that we now know that subjectively there was a Das Yehudis at that time that said that Jewish women should wear a head covering.
Okay,
not the other way around.
But the Rashi and the Rambam both refer to the obligation, or to the... Let's leave it at that. So the reality of a woman covering her hair as Das Moshe. Rabbi Broid therefore concedes that according to Rashi and the Rambam, it is an absolute Torah objective obligation. That's what he concedes. Now, whenever you debate somebody, you never challenge his concessions. You only challenge his opposition. But since I try to be intellectually honest, I will tell you that as Eddie is implying in his statement, and as I was surprised he didn't jump at me last week, because I gave you the hint last week in the early Shabbos Shir, before Mincha, that one can argue that true, it's a Das Moshe according to Rashi and the Rambam, but what does Das Moshe mean? That's a very good question. What does Das Moshe mean? Now let's discuss what Das Moshe means according to Rashi and the Rambam. The two people, the two pillars that according to Rabbi Broid are totally against him. He thinks the Shulchan Aruch is like him, and the Rabbi Shi and Rambam are against him. And I want to say, to be a contrarian, maybe it's exactly the reverse. Let's go slowly. We had mentioned in the top footnote of this very page, Trumat HaDeshen infers from the language of the Rambam that Priyat Rosh is a rabbinic prohibition, and Rabbi Shmuel's exposition merely an illusion, it's asmachta. Where did he get it from? I'll tell you where he got it from. He got it from source B, which although it's referred to here as EH21, it's really a direct quote of the Rambam. Jewish women should not go out into the market with their hair undone, whether single or married. No distinction anywhere in the Rambam is made between a single and a married woman. Contrast that with Shulchan Aruch, that in source C, does distinguish between a woman and a maiden. Rambam makes no such distinction. Since he makes no such distinction, one can argue, I think that's what Trumas HaDeshen is arguing, it's inconceivable that a single woman has a Torah obligation to cover her hair. That's inconceivable to Trumas HaDeshen, because the women in his town didn't do it, and he couldn't imagine that they were going against the Torah's law. Therefore, since the Rambam puts together single and married women, it stands to reason that there's no Torah obligation, not from singles and not from marrieds. That's how I understood the Truma Sedeshin, which is quoted in the very top line of this very same page. You'll ask me a question. But the Rambam does say that covering the hair is Das Moshe. Explicitly, he says so. Here's my answer. Eddie already anticipated it. It is Das Moshe. You know what Das Moshe means? Das Moshe means it's found in the Torah. Because the Torah says, Uparas Rosh HaYisha, he will uncover her hair, implying that before he uncovered her hair, by definition, her hair was covered. You can't kill a dead dog, and you can't uncover an uncovered head. So clearly the head was covered. But the question, of course, becomes, why was it covered? Why? So what Eddie is suggesting, it was covered because the custom of the women at that time was to cover it. What was I referring to with my earlier parry? We discussed last Shabbos, before Mincha, a discussion of whether there's an obligation of a husband to support his wife. And there were those, by Torah law, there were those who attempt to prove that there is, from the fact that the Torah teaches us that we'll read it in a few weeks in Parshas Mishpatim, that if a man is a slave, and while he's serving as a slave, his master has a responsibility to feed the slave's wife. That implies for some that there was obviously he's stepping into the shoes of the husband who has a similar responsibility. But others, particularly the Chochmas Shlomo, if you recall, I believe it's in Simon Samachtes or Ayin, if I'm not mistaken, the Ebenezer says, no! The Torah is simply describing a reality. The average person, decent sort, supports his wife, even if he's not obligated to technically. What's the proof that he's right? Because in that same idea of the supporting the wife, you have to support the children as well. There's no source anywhere as a Torah obligation to support children. It doesn't exist as far as we know. So therefore, but any normal person is going to support his children, not going to starve. So therefore, once again, it could be just a reality and not an obligation. We had given another example. The example we gave on our own at that shiur last Shabbos was about, we spoke again today in the shiur in Ksubis. A woman, the fruits of her field belong to the man. It's called Peiros of Nichsei Melug. And the Gemara Masechet Gittin, Mem Zayin, tells us that if the husband gets those fruits, he's required to bring Bikura from those fruits. He asks Tosfos a question. What fruits? Where fruits? Those fruits are only given to by rabbinical law. He derived it from a verse, from a pasuk. So Tosfos answers, yes, it's true. The formal obligation to give those fruits to the husband is of rabbinic nature. But the reality was, even before the rabbinic law made it into a law, it was done typically. So the Torah is referring once again to the typical state of affairs. Comes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, whom we quoted last Shabbos, and says, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Dim Kain, Butlu Kama Yalfusos. Those are the words that are quoted. Many derivations are going to be weak. Wouldn't surprise me if in the back of his mind, the Lubavitcher Rebbe had in mind this. Because if we're going to interpret it this way, that the woman's going to cover, will uncover her hair because it was covered as a matter of reality, not as a matter of objective obligation, people will say, so it's no longer binding. Maybe that's what the Rebbe was concerned about. I can't read the Lubavitcher Rebbe's mind. I don't, you know, maybe some people who are Hasidim know exactly why he said that. I'm not. But if someone wants to do a research project on it, I'd be very interested to know if that was the basis of his statement. Yes. Okay. If they get through.
That's not the Lubavitcher Rebbe that you're referring to, though.
No, yeah. Rabbi Nachum Mendel, the most recent Lubavitcher Rebbe. If someone gets through, please let me back with the message. Okay. Now, let's go slowly. This is as far as Rambam is concerned. What about Rashi? So Rashi has two separate and distinct explanations as to what the derivation of Upara as Rosh HaYisha is, and Rav Moshe Feinstein in the single one side of the Hebrew page that you have in front of you makes reference to these two in a very, very landmark tshuva. Source 1. We didn't really get to it last time. Source 1, the very first source. Nish'alti, I was asked a question. V'dvar isha shenis almana, a widow, u'tzricha lefarnes bonel, she has to support her children. There's no husband, there's no father. V'eina motza l'staka l'mistra she'yubav k'ne lefarnes bonel, elebim l'otachas es rosha. She has to take off her head covering. She hid by her office. And they put, Bar Ilan puts in, for those who don't know what office means, Misrad. Okay, that's Bar Ilan, they do a good job on these things. Okay? Lava b'misrosa im rasha. Ve'shafti. You can permit it in a case of a great need. Last week, someone that came to me and said that Rav Yoshev was matir for a woman who was needs to take off a shetel to get married, because no one's going to want to go out with her if she appears in that way. He was matir. Today, I got a correction. It wasn't Rav Yoshev was matir, some other great rabbi was matir. I believe Rav Moshe was matir. And for the same reasoning, which he's going to, about to express in this truth. Let's go further. The Ha'poshet, he's going to go on. Even those who say that an almana cannot keep her hair uncovered, can keep her hair uncovered, it's line 3. Hurak mitzad das Yehudis. This is whole last week's shir. There's das Moshe and das Yehudis. Rav Moshe is a devil poshet. Das Moshe is only while she's married. While she is married. When she's no longer married, she's now a widow. It's clear to Rav Moshe as day. There's no Torah obligation to cover the hair. The midoraisa hurak be'eshes ishnema. Right? By Sotah. She's obviously a presently married woman. V'lochein, therefore. Kevin sheish lefarish de me'achash lo'nema b'torah v'loshon iser. Look at this now. Rav Moshe is getting right to the very sensitive point. Really, the Achilles heel over here. It never said in the Torah, it's usher for a woman to go with hair uncovered. Never said so. Therefore what? Hurak chiyuv esei shetelech b'kisi yarosh. It's a positive commandment, by Torah law, Rav Moshe is assuming, a positive commandment for to cover her hair. Now, there's a difference in halacha between a positive and a negative. What's more strict? What, is it more, we have to be more careful to stay away from pork, or more careful to bench after we finish eat a meal? Which is more weighty? What do you say? Correct. Pork. Pork, eating pork is more serious than not benching. You know, benching is a Torah obligation. But staying away from halosis, for example, and I'm not going to get to it right now, you are not required to give up more than 1/5 of your money in order to fulfill a positive commandment. But you are required to avoid violating a negative commandment. Even all your money. This indicates that a low sasei is more strict than an asei. And Rav Moshe is coming to this right now. Look at this amazing tshuva. Says Rav Moshe, "U'mistabla ni'azdaiti, shebezeh pligi beiz ha'lishonis barashi k'subas ayin beiz, b'feirah she'alfusam," in the fifth line of the Paras Rosh Hashanah. The Lishna Kama. And he gives you what Rashi says. If those who want to look inside can see it, it's very clear. Shapirish, first expression of Rashi. First interpretation of Rashi. Dimidavdinan lahochi lenavla mida keneged mida kemosha osasol isnos michlal de osur. What does that mean? This woman took off her hair covered for a boyfriend. She violated a prohibition. So mida keneged mida, we're now going to take off her hair covered in the base of Migdash to embarrass her. If that's the case. If that's correct, then what? Then what? Sova shehu iser. Right? Iser, it's a violation. It reinforces its pritzus. Vadehu iser. So according to the first interpretation of Rashi, Rav Moshe writes, it's aser min haTorah. It's an absolute violation by Torah law for her to uncover her hair. And if that's the case, we'll see you can give no quarter. There's no leniency. It's an iser, like eating pork, yes.
If that iser existed, wouldn't that issue mean that she's not allowed to uncover her hair in a public situation?
Correct.
Well, when she uncovered her hair to her boyfriend, it wasn't a public situation.
Excellent question. That's an excellent question. If you uncovering the hair is a Torah prohibition only in public, how did she violate the Torah prohibition when she uncovered her hair when no one else was in the room except her and her boyfriend? Yichus is a separate prohibition, but that's another problem. But
that's why it won't happen that way. You're not on a date.
I understand.
Depends how you define public.
Oh, see, here's what Rabbi Freeman suggesting. No, she uncovered her hair in the restaurant when they were out there and on the date before they got into the private room. That's one interpretation. Okay, we can give other answers, but...
Where she got caught.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, okay, that's one possible interpretation. Okay, two. There may be other interpretations, but we'll probably come to this. It's an excellent question. That question bothered me too. Question number two. Interpretation number two. Starts a new line. Ulalishna Basra. Everyone look inside. Very, here's the crunch. Ulalishna Basra. Shapirish. This is key. This is the most important line in the whole tshuva, in the whole page, in the whole discussion. Midachsiv upara, says Rashi. For the fact that the Torah says he uncovered, michlal, we can derive, tahi shaita, that at that very moment that it was uncovered, lav perua hava. It wasn't uncovered. You can't uncover an uncovered head. This is the second interpretation of Rashi, which he thinks is the main interpretation. He likes that better. says Rabbi Isha, Shmamina, Ein Derech Benos Yisrael Lotzeis Pruos Rosh. Ooh, look what Rashi say. It's that the way of Jewish daughters to go with the hair uncovered. Mashma, says Rabbi Moshe, Dehu Inyan Mitzvah Oleha Lalechas Bekisi Yerosh V'lo Inyan Isser. What's going on? Rabbi Moshe interprets it that it's a positive commandment. Therefore Rabbi Moshe says, Keniker, what's the difference? Next line. If it's an Isser, too bad. You have to lose all your money for it. Avil Rakhiv Asay. Then Yosef Michomash, next line starts, you're not required to give up more than a fifth. So she's going to lose her entire parnasa, right? Her whole parnasa is more than a fifth, everything. Then Eina Muchayevas Lishnabas Rishuika. So therefore, she would not be required to keep her hair covered. She's going to lose her parnasa. Next paragraph. Ach Mikomako. The Eishes Ish, Huda Raisa. Yesh Lefa Misafek Pirish Lishnabas Rashi. Maybe the first Lashon Rashi is correct. That's an Isser. So you can't help it, even Lehefsa, what can you do? But Be'almana, the last line, Be'almana, Shurak Das Yehudis, Ish Lehoka Misafek. Why? The Vadai Lochomer Me'isa the Rabbanah Shesafek Lekula. So he's saying over here, that according to the second interpretation of Rashi, it's only a mitzvah assay, you don't give up more than one-fifth of your money, so we can't rely upon it for a married woman because it's a Shalva Doraisa, but for the Almana, which is the most of Das Yehudis, the Rabbanah, Safek the Rabbanah, Lekula. It's even less than a Savad. Lo Chamim Yisrael. It's even less than a Savad Rabbanah. Look at his last punchline. V'yesh Gam Loma. The Ulai Das Yehudis Urak Midine Minig She'ein Lesor Ba'ofen Shlomatzinu She'nogu. Look at this. If it's only a Minig, it depends upon the Minig. U'v'mokam Hefzit Holomatzinu She'nogu. Moshe Feinstein. We have no custom, prevailing custom, which tells us for sure that a woman covers the air when she's divorced or widowed if it's going to cause her a loss of money. So therefore, A, may be permissible because more than one-fifth of her money is at stake. B, there may be no violation, even in the, no prohibition in the first place. It's only a Das Yehudis. Ad Kan is landmark tshuva. And I believe in another tshuva, Rav Moshe wrote, or at least it's quoted in his name, that getting married is at least as important as getting a job. Would you say? So therefore, if she can't get married because, you know, no one wants to go out with her because her hair is covered, it'll be permissible in that kind of case as well. Now, Rav Moshe is a little bit careful over here. He's only matter her while she's in the office, only matter for while she's on a date. But you know, there are women who say, I can't go like this, half in and half out. So there are many women who, based on this opinion, if they're trying to get remarried, are lenient in this respect. And although it's very difficult for me to give a firm opinion in this matter, nonetheless, there's certainly an opinion out there, printed here in Rav Moshe, for the purposes of a job, and I believe even with respect to marriage, that this can be relied upon when necessary. My main point is a different point. My main point is, who said it's even a chiyuv aseh? That's a chiddush of Rav Moshe. Let's read the word of Rashi again. Read that line. Please read the line. The line begins from the word ululishna. Right? It's about the eighth line. Ululishna basra shapirish. It gives you what Rashi says. Midiksiv upara. Michlal dahi shata lav prua hava shmamino a derech benos yisrael ates pruos rosh. That's the end quote of Rashi. Mashma to inyan mitzvah aleha lolechas b'kisi rosh. Not an issue. If you ask me, it's not even that. One could argue the word he uses is derech. Don't use the word mitzvah. So therefore, one could argue, what an irony! Rabbi Broid is conceding that according to Rashi and the Rambam, who says that's Moshe. It's objective, it can never change. I'm not 100% sure that's correct. One could argue, I'm not saying it's a fact, one could argue that according to both Rashi and the Rambam, ironically, who refer to it as Das Moshe, they may assume Das Moshe is a Das, a practice, which is described in Torah as Moshe Rabbeinu. That it certainly is. But since when does that mean it's not an Isser according to Rav Moshe, it's called Derech Rashi Shaviker. So Rav Moshe makes it into a Chiyuv essay. Who said? Maybe it's just referring to as Rashi, the Lashon Rashi, Derech Benos Yisroel. But that doesn't prove anything. That one of the Tayyah. But this maybe, therefore, if the Derech changes, it could change. Now, does anybody say so explicitly? Only one Sefer says so. In that 42-page piece by Rabbi Levine, he is willing to concede a limud zchus based on a remarkable sefer called the Sefer Yehoshua. The Sefer Yehoshua is Rav Babad, an ancestor of the Minchas Chinuch. He writes a throwaway line, which I'm sure he never dreamt would ever dig up, but he wrote it, and can't take it back once you write it, especially if you're no longer alive. You just can't take it back. So he wrote a line, you know, very nice. The Torah says it's prohibited. He goes with the prohibition. It's prohibited by Torah law for a married woman to go with the hair uncovered. Do you know why? Because that was the custom then. And then he writes this following throwaway line. If the custom would be the reverse, that would change, that single women cover their hair, and married women don't cover their hair, then, you got it, it would be a Torah prohibition for a single woman to uncover her hair, and be permissible for a married woman. He wrote it. I don't know what the wisdom of writing that was, but he wrote it. So Rabbi Levine writes, I'm willing to concede that's a limud zchus. Somebody said it. But that's out of the way, shita d'chuya, a single opinion, and no one passes that way. If we are right, then the simple read of Rashi, the second Lashon, and even the Rambam, according to the Trumas Hadeshin, yes, it's a Das Moshe, but not the pshat that it was a Torah prohibition and now it's no longer a Torah prohibition, which the Sefer Yehoshua suggests. No, it never was. Rav Moshe said it was never a Torah prohibition, according to Lashon Rashi Shavika. What does he say? It's a Chiyav Esei. Who said so? We don't know that for sure. That's my limud zchus.
That's great.
Thank you. But at the same time, let's go before Eddie Jefferson does a jig. We have to reread footnote 2. First I'll reread, then I'll take a question. It is worth adding. Everyone look, this is the most important line. Now, if this is correct, the most important line comes from it. This is the English page that you have. The small print, the footnote 2. We already read footnote 1, which starts the, and now we're reading this footnote 2, which starts it. This is the page which has the Hebrew at the bottom. It is worth adding that even with regard to what are indisputably the customs of Das Yudis and not outright prohibitions, coming in an alleyway, a courtyard, the assumption that these customs have fallen into disuse and are normative is hardly debatable, even if we grant that the customs of Das Yudis are capable of being abrogated. There's been a sea change in nearly all segments of the Orthodox community. Today, unlike two generations ago, most modest women who are scrupulous in their observance of other halachos are likewise careful about covering their hair. And it is modest and observant women, presumably, who determine the parameters of the customs of Das Yudis. Therefore, as I said last week, all this discussion is basically theoretical in a community such as ours, Baruch Hashem, here in this community, I'm describing this community, this room, where the women cover their hair. So it's irrelevant whether anyone would be moderate in a different society of 50 years ago. Because things have changed. But to my mind, this is a proper way to summarize. A proper way to summarize. In my view, the Shulchan Aruch, I'm exactly the opposite of Rabbi Breuer. The Shturin and the Shulchan Aruch hold that there's a likely, as he puts it, a sota paradigm, a law of the Torah, presumably, and we have every right to assume, reason to assume that it's an unchanging Torah law, because that's what many poskim say. Ironically, Rashi and the Rambam, who call it a Das Moshe, maybe another direction. Because they say, the Rambam equates single and married women, that's the top footnote, that it's only rabbinic, okay, and things can change. And Rashi, in his second interpretation, seems to say that it's only a Derech Benos Yisrael, that potentially might also change. Again, halacha lemaisa, women, married women are absolutely required to cover their hair. No one should go away with any opposite impression. It's only what we call a limud zchus, a post facto justification of what happened generations ago, which, even if it's correct, would no longer apply to today's generation, as we said until now. Having said all this, we now go to the main discussion, which I was asked to have. What about these shaitels that are so beautiful and things of this nature? What's going on over here? So we have to now ask a question which we haven't asked until now, which is, you know, we are learning what the law says. We never really ask too much why. But we have to ask why. Why did the Torah say that a woman who's married should cover her hair? The Torah either records such a custom or makes it, mandates it, or prohibits the opposite of it. We went through these details. But why? Let me tell you why. I'll give you my pshat why. It's a simple pshat. And I've told this story before, but it's worth repetition. About 40, 50 years ago, was a wonderful couple on the west side of Manhattan. That would have these mixers for singles. They're trying to get everybody married. It was, older singles. So they'd have, you know, 25 men and 25 women who were single above the age of 25. That's 25, okay? 25 men, 25 women, over 25. Good? Or put them together in a place, they had a big apartment. It was beautiful. What a beautiful thing. But you know, you have to have chaperones, right? You have to facilitate it. And so you had facilitators. In those days, in the West Side, the women who were married mostly didn't cover their hair, as we mentioned already then. Guess what happened? Not a surprise. The most socially adept women were the married women. So guess what? These guys, these men, don't know one from the other. So they start talking to this one, and also they start saying, you know, I know where are you from, and then, you know, perfectly appropriate if the woman is single. Excuse me, that's my husband over there. Oh, excuse me. And say, maybe they didn't see there, they had a ring, or they didn't have to take the ring, wasn't, whatever it may be. The next year, they decided, we have to, this is ridiculous. When you check in at the door, are you single or married? If you're single, you wear one apple on your lapel. And if you're married, you wear two apples on your lapel. A light bulb went on in my head. That's why the Torah said that a woman who's married should cover her hair. The ring, they used to get married with apples. Or, speaking of apples on the lapel. Or used to get married with money, and they put the money in the bank. The whole idea of a ring is a later, although the chinuch does say that she should wear a ring so she knows she's married, you can't always see a ring. That's the proof of the pudding is, in this case, I just tell you, you don't see the fingers are down here. They just look at the head. So that's my theory. It's my own theory. That the Torah wanted to make it obvious that a woman is married. Just look at her covered hair, you know, right away. She's married, out of bounds, don't go near her. That's my theory. This explains three things. Three distinctions between the Torah law and later rabbinic additions. One, we just had it. A woman who was married. She's now widowed or divorced. Moshe by Torah law, no way that she's required to cover her hair. Only rabbinic. Obvious reason. Now in the country, she's not attached. We have to find her a marriage pardon. Number two, we spoke about last week. This week. Shuk. By Torah law, as you said, it's only in the marketplace. Not in the private place. Why? Because in the marketplace, nobody knows who she is. She's walking in the marketplace. It's the public property. So you have to identify her as being married. In a private place, where it's more likely that people know who she is. So then, the Torah itself does not require it. The rabbis require it. And number three, how much must be covered? That was again last week. But Rabbi Moshe writes, by Torah law, you have to cover the majority of her, what?
Head.
And by rabbinic law, Rabbi Moshe writes, the entirety of her hair, except for a tefach. Why? Again, the same reason. If the majority of her head is covered, it's clear as day that she is married. But if the rabbis came along, as Rabbi Moshe in source number two, and said, you know, we have to cover the rest of it as well. These three distinctions all fit in perfectly with my theory. Now we come to something fascinating. As of what moment is a married woman required to cover her hair? As of what moment? As of what precise second is she required to cover her hair? I'm asking you that question. You have an answer?
I think ever she would be not married with her husband.
Okay, that's one possibility. After she was alone with her husband in seclusion, what we call the yichud, that's one possibility.
That's why it takes an hour and a half before they come out.
That's probably why. Okay, on. Maybe. It's one reason.
Maybe there's a big, a lot of been talking about Yisrael.
No, yes.
With the girl, the Kala, continued through the entire Hasana with her own hair.
100%. Always, it was always customary. I know that there were other different, where I came from, was absolutely customary. That happened true by my wedding. It happened by my daughter's weddings. My daughters-in-law, I can't vouch for each and every one. They had their own place where they came from. That the woman covered her hair with that white veil. You know, the veil was still here. The hair piece came back. And they had that white thing. No, not tiara. A white headpiece which covers the majority of the head. Yes, it's see-through. It's true, it's see-through. But it covered the majority of the head. In my opinion, that head covering, which covers the majority of the head, even if it's see-through, satisfies the Torah's requirement. That's what's called kalsa. Kalsa was a wicker basket. You can see right through it. That's how, in my opinion. And that's why I'm very unhappy with another custom, which has started recently. If you look at all the wedding albums, you will not see it. But it started very recently. If you look at all the wedding albums, go home and open up your wedding album, or you'll see that during the dancing, the kala had that white thing on her head. You'll see it. Now, you come to some weddings, nothing. Garnished.
Or it's falling out.
Nothing. Or they have what you call a tiara, which is also nothing. It doesn't cover anything. It's a braid that teenagers wear. It's garnished. It's made from fancier stuff. But it's nothing. I'm opposed to that view. However, despite my opposition to the view, I can justify it. I can. I'll tell you how I can justify it. Since the derivation that a married woman has to cover her hair is from Sota, and one cannot be eligible for Sota until having had her marriage consummated, lived with her husband, only that Kodma Shrivas Baal Shrivas Boel. So therefore one could argue, and Rav Moshe has this in some Ksav Yavah, which is going to be published soon, one could argue that the obligation for the woman to cover her does not begin until she lived with her husband. So the next morning she has to cover her hair. Pull that knot. And that would justify this newfangled custom of wearing nothing. But I am not, it was not that way when I was growing up. And nothing on their head.
Other weddings, they wear nothing.
Okay. That we spoke about a few weeks ago. Okay. Nah, yichud. If anyone who consummates his marriage in his yichud room has to have his head examined. Okay.
But it could be the other way. It could be yichud between the, you know, they could go home and not consummate their marriage.
That's also true. So if any woman wants to not cover her hair and show off and say, well, I didn't consummate my marriage last night, so therefore I'm okay. She also has a head examined. We have to have a lot of heads have to be examined. But let's hope that we have unexamined heads in this room. And so we're talking about normal situations. So therefore, although it can be justified, but in my view, it's not the custom. And since the other child might be true also, we don't know which child is true. So therefore, a woman whose marriage should be covering her head at the wedding with a veil. Now, true, Rabbi Avadia has a tshuva. He writes, we Sfardim who don't have yichud have no problem. But Achenu Ashkenazim, our Ashkenazic brethren, if they have yichud, they certainly have to cover their hair completely once they come out of the yichud room. And don't tell me about the veil. That's see-through. You mean you can cover the rest of the body with a see-through? That's incorrect. Because here it's a matter of covering their head to show that she's a married woman. That, to my mind, that suffices on the level of the Oraisa. And therefore, that's what they left as a custom. Again, the other position that they can uncover the entire head, it's out there. I even justified it myself. But I don't think it's normative practice. It should not be done that way.
Your sfar right. What the reason of this is. Who is going to mistake a kala at her wedding?
You can't. That's a very dangerous, slippery slope. Once the halacha requires that a woman who's married is has to have her head covered, we cannot start saying, "Well, everyone knows she's married." That's Queen of England. You know, we can't go with that kind of thing. Yes.
Okay. So can you answer? You say one of the reasons the woman covers her hair so the men should know that she's married.
Right.
But if the shaykhah nowadays is so beautiful.
I'm about to come to that. I don't mind the shape being beautiful. Doesn't bother if it's beautiful. It's called beautiful. But if the shape is such a good imitation of the person's hair that you can't tell it's not her hair, I'm opposed to it. Strongly opposed to it. Very strongly opposed to it. And let me tell you. Let me tell you a few stories about this. Slowly. No, it's not at all a chok. I'm giving you a reason for it. By definition, not a chok.
But you said it's your reason for it, but just the halacha.
No. Why is it a chok? Chok is, why should it be a chok? If we can give a reason for something, we don't have no reason to assume it's a chok. Now, let me take it a step further. This position of mine is, I believe, correct. And now, as an aside, it's not a topic for today, as an aside, when the whole tumult started with the Indian shaitels, which is the Indian hair, which is the source for some of these human hair shaitels. The rabbi, the main rabbi from England, who was responsible for the entire tumult, made a comment, an offhanded comment, which was very enlightening to me. And he said, forget about what I'm saying about Avodah Zarah. We have to be against it because it looks like her hair. Which led me to believe there was a quote agenda over here. Aside from the fact-finding upon, but there may have been an agenda. I get very nervous with agendas. So, therefore, despite my agreement with this rabbi, that a woman, it looks like her hair is a problem, but I'm not going to skew the facts about the Avodah Zarah aspect. Just as an aside comment. When my my sons got married, and his wife came from a family where they had a very already a history with a particular shetel person whose name is Ralph. Some women are shaking their heads. Ralph apparently is the number one. I'm not sure one of the number one. He's a goyish shetel nacham who is a tzaddik because he went into business originally to help cancer patients who lost their hair, really, and he wanted to help them out. He was terrific, and the problem was that he does such a good job. That's a problem. So my future daughter-in-law told him, Ralph, please make me an idea, but it shouldn't look like my hair. He says, what? My whole essence is to make the shade look just like it. Yeah, but my father-in-law has a problem with it. My future father-in-law said, do me a favor. It shouldn't look exactly like my hair. So Nebuch, I was a party pooper in that particular case. But I feel strongly. It could be nice. There's nothing wrong with looking nice. But it should be clear even to people like me who are far from sophisticated in this area, whether it's natural hair or it's human hair which is not attached to that woman's head. You know? Yes.
So you're not saying it shouldn't look like her hair, like her real hair, because if you're like in back in the shuk situation, a man should know who's marrying and who's not.
Right.
So I might not know what that woman's
right.
real hair looks.
100%.
Like. I don't really have to care.
Doesn't right.
I have to look at the shape and say this is not.
This is a shape, right?
This is a shape.
It could be the same color as her hair. It could be beautiful. All the.
So then any of the human.
Listen, I'm not an expert, but I think my percentage of guessing right with most of these shetels is pretty good, but some of these super, super, super expensive special human hair shetels, they try to fool people like me.
And some very cheap ones.
That's expensive.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think about a man?
Oh, you're asking a different question. A man, well, obviously they have to be proper tzniyot, and he's a yichud, the whole story. But I, she's in a different question. Not make the shetel. Can he fit the shetel on you when your hair is uncovered? Yeah. That's what Ralph does? I don't know. I never met Ralph.
He's a guy.
Okay, I don't know. Again, I don't know. I can't speak of what I don't know. It would be a potential problem, because in my view, a married woman should not uncover her hair, even in private, as long as there's another man there who's not her husband. Or we can say her a first-degree blood relative. We can be makel for a father, for a son, for a brother.
Doctor.
Oh, so if you're going for brain tumor surgery, obviously she's going to take off her shade.
I mean, your situation, doctor. I mean, barbers.
Barbers, I'm not running to a barber. The barber, you can have a woman barber. You can cut your hair yourself. I mean, why must you do it? So again, maybe shas atzchak situations. I'm not running to go to Ralph if you have to go with your hair uncovered in front of Ralph, even though Ralph's only one person. I have to tell you, there's one line in Rav Moshe which I don't know what it means. If you take a look over here in source number two.
So according to your chat,
yes,
nothing to do with Savi share.
Oh, I'm coming to that. That's exactly why I didn't like the Aruch HaShulchan we spoke about last week. Aruch HaShulchan is source number, let's go to source number four first, okay? Source number four first. The famous Aruch HaShulchan says, so in the Hebrew, there's only one side of Hebrew page. He has Aruch HaShulchan says that since nowadays, unfortunately, Rabban Hussein or Rabbim, that the women who are married uncover their hair, he paskins on line three, that it's permissible to say Krishma, even though that hair is visible. As the Mordechai said, quoting the Rav Yoh, and we saw this last week in the Rush, called Advarim, or 2 weeks ago, Sheskana Le'erva, Dafka Bedavash and Regilus Ligolos. But if she normally keeps it uncovered, then there's no hero. We saw that. So he says by Nesuas, the same thing applies in those times in Lithuania. I disagree. I'll tell you why. Every other situation, we have to understand what came first, the chicken or the egg. It's always a symbol. As our rabbis put, what's the siba and what is the misubav? Okay? Let's explain as follows. Seems to me When it comes to the other body parts that she's required to cover, those body parts of the woman are arousing to a typical male, and therefore they have to be covered. What does that mean? It's erva. Erva means something which is arousing to a man. And for that reason, the halacha is you have to cover it. That's the siba, that's the masuba. So therefore, if that's the case, as Rabbi Yos said, what if it's not arousing? Because like we spoke about, they used to cover their sleeves till the wrist, now they only cover till the elbow, whatever. So it's no longer arousing, no obligation to cover it. Right? It's not, and it wouldn't be a problem for Kriya Shema either. However, when it comes to hair, it's the other way around. The hair, we can't say the hair is arousing, like, because single women don't cover the hair. So by definition, it can't be that way. It's the other way around. The Torah said, cover the hair. For whatever reason, if you like my reason, you want to call it a chok, I don't care. The Torah said, if you're married, you have to cover your hair. Now, once the Torah said, you're married, you have to cover your hair, for whatever reason, second step is, ser b'yisharev. Right? With all the detailed definitions. Therefore, it's not going to help the fact that now you're used to it and there's no hero. It's objective. The Torah said a woman who's married must cover her hair. It's not based on, quote, arousal. And therefore, it's not subject to the leniency of regilus. So ironically, if I'm correct, by the way, Moshe is exactly the opposite of me, if I'm correct, paradoxically, seir, which is only applies to a certain group of women, namely the married group, but not the single group, in this respect, in this regard, is more strict than the other areas. Because the other areas, let's say the arms, which must be covered because they're arousing. So if they're used to keeping it uncovered, so then it's no longer arousing, so you don't have to cover it, or at the very least, it's not a problem with respect to Shema. When it comes to the hair, it's the other way around. Not that it's arousing as such. It has to be covered. For whatever reason, the chok or my reason, it doesn't matter. Once it has to be covered, it has a status of erva. So the fact that in Lithuania they didn't cover the hair, it's an irrelevancy, if you ask me. If you hold it, the Rambam, Pshat and Rambam is correct. And the Rambam makes no distinction between single and married, which is in a sense of leniency, that's going to leave out a stricture. So then the Aruch HaShulchan would be right. So that would lead it's a stricture that single women have to cover their hair, and it's a leniency that if they don't cover, single and married, you can say Shema. But if we go against the Rambam, which we normative halacha is against the Rambam, single women do not cover their hair, only married women, and that's why, because either it's a chok or by reason to identify them as being married women. So for that, if that's the obligation, and that leads to the din of Seir B'Sherva, the fact that it's commonly uncovered in that time and place is not going to help us. Yes, sir.
I think you're directly conflicting what you said last week.
Go ahead.
Because last week we spoke about the Torah requirement to cover the top of the head, and you said that it was only a Das Yehudis. If a woman wanted to wear a baseball cap in a community where everybody wore a baseball cap,
correct,
then she could let the rest of her hair flow out
by Torah law, and therefore it would
actually by Das Yehudis law. You said
if everyone does it,
community, if everybody does it,
correct.
Right. Therefore, the Torah is not requiring her to cover.
I agree with you. Oh no, she wears a baseball cap.
Hair is not an erva by Torah law.
No.
You just said it was.
No. Let me repeat myself one more time. If she's wearing the baseball cap, okay, and in that town every woman wears a baseball cap, and they wear it, you know, they wear it all kinds of funny ways, frontwards, backwards, side, I don't know, and other hair comes out, then in my view, A, she's permitted to go that way, if that's what everyone goes. B, no problem for Kriya Shema. But if there's a community where they don't wear baseball, in Lithuania they don't have baseball caps. They wore nothing. So then it's prohibited to say Kriya Shema. Because that has an objective status of requirement to cover. And therefore, once it's an objective requirement to cover, so therefore the Chazal came with a rule that it's considered to be an erva. And the fact that every woman is uncovering it will not help us. There's no contradiction to what I said last week. That's if they wear baseball caps. They wear no baseball caps. Yes, ma'am.
Rabbinically,
it depends where you are.
Can a close family member, like a son or husband, can they say Shema with you?
Oh, so a husband can certainly not say the Shema when he's sitting right opposite his wife, because the husband, we hope, is attracted by the wife's appearance, right, including her hair, And therefore, if it's a problem, even in the privacy of the home. You're asking a different question, a difficult question. What about other blood relatives? A son, let's say a son. Can the son say, bench, right? The husband's not home, the son is home. By strict halacha, a woman, as Rav Moshe says in other tshuvas, a woman's not required to cover her hair in the privacy of her home, not even if her son is around. So the son is around and the mother's not covering her hair, which is technically speaking permissible. And now the son wants to bench, and the mother's sitting on the other side of the table, right opposite him. Is he allowed to bench in that fashion? This is a difficult question to answer. It may be permissible on the following grounds. It's true, as we just said now, the din of Seir Bisha Erva is not based upon whether it's alluring to the viewer or not, if I'm correct, against the Aruch HaShulchan. However, there's certain relatives, or such close relatives, that perhaps, I mean, the Gemara is in somewhat different cases. I'm not going into the details, a little bit surprising to the modern ear, about certain leniencies that exist between fathers and daughters and mothers and sons in the halachas of Krishma, those who know what I'm talking about in the third paragraph of Masechta Brachos, which indicate that perhaps for these first-degree blood relatives, we have certain leniencies with respect to Shema. So that might apply in this case. I'm not giving a definitive opinion on that. It's a good question. Yes, sir?
When we lived in the Heights, I remember distinctly that Rav Breuer, Olam HaShalom, at weddings that he performed, the kallahs wore a shaver already.
Before they even walked into the room. Absolutely.
That was his custom.
100%. I know. I'm fully aware of that. And I respect every minute. It seems to be against the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that if a virgin bride marries, it's Yotzeh Beinuma V'Rosha Perua. She means that she's not covering all the way with a sheitel. But Rabbi Breuer is a bigger Talmud Chacham than I am, and he must have had a very good reason to introduce it in that fashion. Maybe he felt that it's only until the Yichud, and they have no time to play with the Yichud. He's trying to save time. I don't know what the reason was. Whatever the reason was, we don't question the great Tzaddikim and Gaonim who came before. We are very, very respectful of other opinions. I'm happy you mentioned it. I'm very happy you mentioned it. That's very good. Are there any other questions about this? Is all part of last week's year. Are there any questions about Seiya before we proceed to the next topic? Maybe I left something which I didn't. I tried to forgive the expression, cover the topic fairly well. If there are no further questions, we're going to now start at the end of this year. We'll have to finish it next time. Now next week is no Shia. We'll be in Eretz Yisrael, Mr. Hashem. But in 2 weeks we're going to resume. We'll have to finish this topic and go to the next. And that's the topic of Kol B'Isha Erva. Now for those who have the two-sided Hebrew document, it says Rabbeinu Osher, the Rosh, says page Nun Dalet, where we are taught, it's page Nun Dalet, column 1, about line 10 approximately, Amar Shmuel, Kol B'Isha Erva. Shenemar, ki kolech orev, pirish l'shmoa, v'lo l'inyan kriyashma. This has nothing to do with Shema, according to the opinion of the Rosh. If you look on the bottom, we mentioned this 2 weeks ago as well, there's a Divrei Chamudos, okay, top of column 2, Avala Mordechai, Kosta B'Shir Rabbeinu Hai, T'chol Hani l'inyan kriyashma. It has to do with kriyashma. And then he says, Kol zemer afilu b'ishto erva. Obviously, that's not, how can that be? It's his own wife. The answer is, he's allowed to hear his wife sing, but not when he is saying Kriya Shema. Because when he's saying Kriya Shema, he should be focused on Kriya Shema, not on his wife's voice, as beautiful as his wife's voice may be. If I care, the more beautiful, the more distracting it is. And the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh li zoher b'Kriya Shema. What do you mean, Yesh li zoher? What kind of weak language is that? Since according to the Rosh, it's nothing to do with Krishma, and according to the Mordechai, it does. So the Shulchan Aruch has a compromise. Yesh li zoher. Yesh, you should be careful. You should try to avoid saying the Shema when a woman's voice is audible, even if it's your own wife's voice.
Applies to benching too, then.
Benching. Oh, so here's a question, which I brought a terrific sefer over here. You should be very appreciative of the sefer. It says, Maskeres Misimchas HaBar Mitzvah Shel Moshe Gelptuch Nero Yor. Okay, we know how old he is. It's Tovshin Samach. Okay, and they gave out, at that time, the Halicha Shlomo, which was the Torah of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which was put out by the Tel Aviv Yeshiva, which has a connection to the Gelbtuch family. As a matter of fact, on the very opening page, you'll see that the Gelbtuch family donated a large sum to dedicate this sefer. And here, we have some fascinating psukim of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, which relate to this issue. Let's explain. Now, we have to understand a very fundamental dispute. A very fundamental dispute. And that is as follows. What is the halacha with respect to a woman who is unmarried and is tahora? We'll say she's 10 years old. She's 10 years old. And she is an Isha Tahora, and may I hear her singing voice? Good question, no? This goes to the root of the question as to why the halacha is they're not permitted to hear the voice of a woman who's singing. There could be two explanations. Two. One explanation is that, look, the voice as such is something which will arouse a man to bad thoughts, and those bad thoughts themselves are a prohibition, and therefore the voice is a problem. That's possibility number one. Possibility number two, the Gemara has in Masechta Megillah that there was a woman who, quote, Bekola Zinsa, she was carried on illicit affairs based upon her voice, which was seductive. So we're afraid of the seductive quality of the female voice, presumably the single voice, or even, as the Gemara puts it in Kiddushin, certain types of speaking voices, which is called She'elat Shalom. Now that's a remarkable Gemara. We think that the speaking voice of a woman is no problem. Kol Dibur, the Ramos says, depends what kind of Dibur. You know, if you perhaps had some exposure to some of the media from two generations ago, so you may remember that sometimes someone would say hello, like, you know, hello, or something like that, you know. That was itself almost a proposition. So that was a serious issue of Kol B'Isha Erva. Okay? And the singing voice is assumed in general to be a problem by most authorities, and no matter what you're singing. Yes, there are those who maintain minority views that the only time a singing voice is a problem is if the singing voice is singing love songs. But the singing voice is singing, I don't know, Kabbalah Shabbos, just to pick an example out of a hat, then maybe it wouldn't be, according to this minority view, a violation of Kol B'Isha Erva. Yeah, but of course, as we said before, it's relevant to Zmiris, we'll get to in a moment. So this will depend upon a big machlokas. The Mishnah Brura adopts a lenient view. Rav Moshe passes that way as well. That if a woman is 10 years old, not married, her voice is not a problem. This indicates that it's not the arousal to bad thoughts as such, because then it wouldn't matter whose voice it is. So it's a female voice. But rather, it's the fear, chas v'shalom, that it could lead to illicit activity, and presumably the rabbis only prohibited hearing the voice of a woman if, in case, chas v'shalom, there would be illicit activity. It would be an illicit activity of a very high level of prohibition, as opposed to if the woman is not an Eishes Ish and not a Nida, so then there would not be a violation of Kares. So therefore, even though it's prohibited, it's not. They didn't make this prohibition with respect to her hearing her voice. So it appears is the opinion of the Mishnah Brura.
So,
yes.
So if the woman was, let's say, on stage, and there was no possibility of having a affair with her.
So that's an interesting point. Rabbi Ellenson has a sefer called Ha'isha V'Hamitzvos, and one of his vibes is called Atznei Aleches, in which he suggests that the certain great rabbis would frequent the opera. I'm not here to mention their names. I'm not mentioning any names, but those who know that great rabbis frequent the opera, and the question is how they do it. It's obviously a female voice. So, presumably, he suggests, the answer would be, since this is the nature of the prohibition, don't hear the woman's voice, lest it come to an illicit activity between the man who's listening and the woman who's singing. He says, you know, there's an expression, how's it go? It ain't over till the fat lady sings. Some of them. That fat lady is surrounded by 25 bodyguards. She sings in Italian. You're up in the bleachers and you go, it's impossible. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. So therefore they assumed that it was perhaps okay. My response to that is that maybe it's true intrinsically, but from the opera to the school or camp playhouse is only one short step. They sing the same songs or whatever, the same type, and therefore it seems to me it's very difficult to rely upon such a view. It's interesting that the Poskim do discuss, are Jewish girls allowed to sing in their schools, but they're gonna, you can hear it in the street? Can hear in the street? Look at that.
So that's the question is it's called the Isha Ergo when it's a chorus?
Oh, it's another question. So some say if it's a chorus, they use the expression Tre Koli Lo Mishtami. The Gemara has that expression himself in Rosh Hashanah. If they're two different voices, you can't really hear any of the voices distinctly. If that's the case, there's room to be lenient because they can't hear anybody's voice. That's if they're all, you know, 100 girls in the school are singing the same song in their school, and you can hear the windows face the street, and you can hear it. So there's much more room to be lenient in that kind of a situation. Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying that if the girls are on a bus, on an outing, a school outing, they should not sing because there's a driver there. Now they have women drivers, that'll solve the problem. Okay? Although the Piskei Chuvis has a suggestion, if he's a not from bus driver, he will have no hanah from what we call the shir charedi. And if they sing some kind of charedi shenigan, he's not going to enjoy it. But if he's a from bus driver, then it's a problem. That's what he thinks. Interesting distinction. Interesting.
He held that chorus was awesome.
Could be. I don't know how big the chorus was, etc. It's
the singing voice is accompanied by an instrument, like Miriam, the Pikat Miriam.
Right. Okay, but she sang in front of women. We don't find that she sang in front of any men. We just don't find it. These are all serious halachic issues. What about Zniris? Can you sing Zniris in the house? So I have here the Halicha Shlomo. Mutter Meikir Adin Lezamer Zmiras Shabbos Kshemizamros Gam Krovosov, his relatives, who were the relatives? His mother, his wife, his daughter, his sister. Even though, so notice, he's assuming there's no problem in general. The problem now is he's saying Krishna. What kind of Krishna is Miras? Even though he's saying Psukim, because this we can room to be lenient. Why? Aishas Chayil is Divrei Torah. No, he says, it's only Zmiros, Derech Zimra, Veshavach, Lo Bederech Lima Divrei Torah. Excuse me. Achidish of Rav Moshe, of Rav Shlomo Zalman rather, who is lenient. So too, what about a tape? So guest, he's not matir guest. He's only matir krov. He's not matir guest.
I feel like at a Friday night dinner or something, right, which happens in our shul.
Right.
And the rabbi, you know, starts off with his mirrors.
Right.
And some women on your table begin to sing along.
Good question. So the
walk out immediately.
No, I don't know.
I tried to.
Well, I guess one way is to drown them out. If the men sing louder, then the women's voices are not so audible. And Azmiris is even less than Eishes Chayil. It's Azmiris, but you're right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with women singing a little bit, but they should try to sing in a fashion which is not all that audible. So it's a difficult balance. I think women enjoy singing, and we shouldn't take away their own Shabbos. They like to sing, but they can sing in a way, you know, in an undertone, that they enjoy the singing, or they enjoy their little harmony that they're singing along. But it's not so audible that everybody has to hear them in a full voice. Yet, I'm cognizant of the fact that there were those who maintain that when it comes to these, you know, Shirei Kodesh, that's not a problem of Kolisha. What we had a discussion a few weeks ago about Kriyas HaTorah, and where women can lay. And there was a question of Kovat HaTzibur, otherwise maybe she could lay. And the question becomes, what happened to Kol Bisharva by the Leining. And some say it's only a chant. It's not a song. Some say it's a Devarim Shabbat Kedusha. It's the Divrei Torah, which may be even permissible. It's complicated. Yes.
Seder.
Seder. Seder is like a regular meal.
Seder. Like, isn't the Haggadah when you, if everybody sings the Haggadah,
right,
and there are places in the Haggadah that people sing.
Again, so the women, I prescribe that the women should sing in a lower voice, and that but if they sing in a loud voice but in front of their relatives, Surah Shlomo Zalman gives a leniency. That's not done b'toras divrei Torah, only b'toras miras or b'toras seder or b'toras whatever it happens to be. And chiddush for Shlomo Zalman, but Shlomo Zalman said it. It's on page Reish Mem Gimel and Halicha Shlomo on Tefillah. It's a very important source. It's an important source to know. And I'll disagree, agree, but this is what it seems to be said. He also has matnas, as we said before, a tape. But, you know, that's only if it's not going to have any arousal. It seems to me, it depends what she is singing on tape. Some of these music presentations today, it seems to me, are so vulgar, it's prohibited to hear it, even if a man is singing. It's disgusting. I mean, it's erev mamash. It's terrible, terrible, disgusting. So, but if it's something which is, quote, clean, and it's on a tape, and it doesn't lead to a person to think bad thoughts, Shlomo Zalman seems to be mekel. Again, I'm sure you'll find those who are will be more less strict. We're talking about not b'shas kriyishma. Okay, this is an important leniency over here. But in a microphone, he says it's not allowed. Even though Shlomo Zalman is the famous one who said that a microphone is not really the same voice, doesn't apply over here. That's where Shlomo Zalman writes right over here. Very important. Distinction. The time is up, but we should say that there is a serious issue. What happens if he doesn't see her or doesn't recognize who she is? Is there a problem? So it's first glance the Mordechai prohibits it. He's discussing a situation where there are women who are singing outside. We can't help it. So it's Eis Las Hashem Hefer Tavasecha. Otherwise, it would not be allowed. That might be restricted to Zman Kriya Shema and would not apply as a general rule. So this is a very brief overview of Kol Isha, which we could spend much more time on, but we just ran out of time. Now, again, next week, there is no Shir. Mr. Shem, in 2 weeks, we'll resume with the next topic about weddings. I want to just make an announcement, a sad announcement. I just received information that Rabbi Yisachar Meir was Nifter, one of the great tzaddikim of our generation, who spent time here in our community and who built Torah in the Negev, one of the greatest pioneers of Torah in the last 50 years in all of Eretz Yisrael. Aside from his being a tremendous tzaddik and a Baal Yisurim, and aside from his being a visionary and a pioneer with the things which people never thought could happen, and it's only in his chus, which everyone will tell you, You have Torah al Fakim and then Tifrach and all those. They all started with him. We're very sad to hear of his petira, and his schus should protect us for all time until the Mashiach comes. And here of Yemeinu, Amen.